All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. Today is September 25th. We have a full agenda today, so we will go ahead and call the meeting to order, starting with roll call. Ken Kawamoto?
Here.
Stephen Lane?
Here.
Anil Jain?
Here.
Arian Malik? Andy Trescott? Clint McDonald?
Here, but I have to apologize. I have to get back to a Board of Regents meeting at 10:30, so I won't be on the whole time.
Okay. Thank you, Clem. Cynthia Fisher?
Here.
David McCallie?
Here.
Edward John?
Here.
Terry O'Malley?
Here.
Leslie Leonard? Not yet. Jack Poe? Raj Watani? Ram Sharam?
Here.
Ricky Bloomfield?
Good morning, I'm here.
Thank you. Sasha Termot?
Here.
Scott Weingarten? Okay. Cheryl Turney? Tamer Fakowry?
Here.
Please join. Tina Esposito? I believe she said she was going to be absent today. Valerie Gray. And Victor Lee.
Here.
Thank you, everyone. I am going to now turn it over to our co-chairs, Ken Kawamoto and Stephen Lane.
Great. Thank you. So last time we met, we discussed what the task force members thought were issues in the order, area of orders and results, with a particular focus around around labs. What we did in the interim since then, we created a Google Doc or spreadsheet that's available view only to the task force members, and Stephen, myself, and Arian started editing it at some. We had a meeting last week with a number of subject matter experts who many of whom gave us information at the last meeting. What we basically did was organize the issues into problems, examples, associated standards and issues, and importantly, proposed remedies. So one of the issues we discussed in particular was once we have a recommendation of what needs to be done, well, what how do we actually potentially get that to happen, and what are the different levers that are available? So that's where we're at now. I'd say at this point, we'd like the task force to review what we have come up with, also to prioritize and probably to prune, to come up with probably a prioritized list of recommendations and approaches, at least in this area, with an acknowledgement that if we decide to hold off on some areas, let's say for non-lab resultables or observations, that we can always come back to it later as well. I don't know if Stephen or anyone else engaged in this would like to comment.
I mean, I'll just add that we're really trying to winnow down the larger set of ideas and recommendations that have come out of our discussions to truly have something that it will be able to turn into our report out on this domain of orders and results. And again, we're trying to develop a bit of a methodology here that we'll be able to apply as we go on and look at other priority domains such as referrals and others that we have discussed.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, Ken, it's David McCauley. I had to miss the last meeting due to travel. I'm just curious what the goal of the report is to identify new standards, actions. Is there a we identify a problem, are we proposing solutions?
Yes. So I think that's maybe something that is probably the trickiest. So we identify a problem. At this point, there's no clear major lever that ONC controls in some of these areas, such as, you know, new meaningful use or HR certification requirements. So the issue is, how do we get a problem that that is identified solved? I think that'll be a key focus and an area that Ariane in particular spent a lot of expertise and effort contributing some thought to that we'd like to discuss today.
But specifically, David, what our charge is as a task force is to make recommendations regarding, quote, subsequent steps for industry and government action. That's our charge.
Okay, recommendations for action. That makes sense.
Yeah.
And that could include anything from new standards needed to something else. Argonaut should take up such and such or whatever.
Exactly. Another thing that is, again, referencing the text in our task force charge, is we are meant to identify the standards and implementation specifications that best support or may need to be developed for each identified priority.
Thanks.
Sounds good. Okay. We'll get to that in a second. We would like to start with a presentation on Blink from experts at Reagan Streif, obviously because Blink is quite important in this field. There's no other discussion at this point. I'd like to move us forward to that and then come back to this discussion. Okay. Dan, would you like to move forward from here on the presentation? Are you on the audio?
Maybe he's on mute.
Dan, you're muted if you're on.
Am I on now?
Oh, we can hear you now.
Awesome. The multiple mute buttons always get me. So this is Dan from Reagan Streif. I'm the director of Launch here. And I'm going to try to address some of the questions that came up. It's kind of broad territory, but I'll try to stay at a level that is, I think, will be helpful to the task force. I'll just sort of ask to advance the slides as we go through. So the first one is just a disclosure there to let you know that I'm part of a company that wrote a book about Loink, and I'm a PI on some commercial sources of Loink. But I put up on the next slide the sort of full list of funding sources for Loink, so you get a sense of how does a standard like Loink get produced, and it's from the support of a lot of different organizations there. All right, next slide. So the first thing I wanted to do is just sort of remind you that I'm coming at this from the perspective of viewing Loink kind of as one piece of a broader set of solutions. But ultimately, it, you know, comes down to people who actually want their health IT systems to work together. And so there's a technical component, but for sure there's like an ecosystem component that's enabling data sharing. But it doesn't take too long to sort of realize what is it that we want to try to accomplish. And so if you go to the next slide, Loink is focused on solving a particular part of this interoperability puzzle here. And so technical standards that move data around, like HL7, version 2, or FHIR, and so forth, are wonderful, and we need them. But if you start moving data around, absent sort of a focus on coding stuff, you get to a thorny place. And so here's a picture of, like, the codes that represent a test here in, you know, the Indianapolis region, and you see sort of the wild variation that exists. And this is the problem that Loink is trying to address, is to come up with a coding standard that matches the level of granularity that reflects these kinds of observations in real systems. So next slide, Loink's purpose is basically to be that universal standard for identifying health measurements, observations, and documents. That's kind of the main focus of Loink content. And it's designed to have the level of specificity that distinguishes between clinically important differences. And of course, that's sort of use case specific and purpose dependent, but it distinguishes from, say, a billing purpose, right? What we're trying to do is create codes that reflect that level of precision that's needed for exchange and action from a clinical perspective. Next slide. So the scope of LOINC is that realm of observations, measurements, and documents, but it covers kind of a broad territory. And if you sort of zoom out and take, say, a view from like the precision medicine perspective, where you've got on the one hand, detailed genetic level data, and on the other hand, you've got sort of environmental context or behavioral type information, LOINC fits across that whole spectrum, which might be somewhat of a surprise to some folks, but certainly there are areas where we're more robust. But it's essentially across that whole continuum, wherever you're trying to record information in that observation-observation value paradigm, LOINC is trying to create codes that identify those different variables or observations. And so it certainly takes into account, laboratory and sort of traditional clinical measurements, but also some, lifestyle or behavioral or even environmental variables where the unit of analysis might not actually even be an individual patient. But just to give you a spectrum, that's sort of, the overall place that LOINC covers. Today, there's about 87,000 or so variables in it. Next slide. And it's being used not only in the U.S., but around the world, which is just important for some context about how content gets into LOINC, as well as the impact of what we're doing and how that translates to an international audience. But the vast majority of those users are from the U.S., probably about two-thirds. Next slide. So, just to make it sort of clear, right, LOINC is designed for this specific role of identifying observations. And it works equally well whether you're talking about a transport mechanism like HL7 version 2 or a document paradigm like CDA or an API-based access like FHIR or even something like a common a data model that's used in research networks like PCORI or Odyssey and so forth. Anywhere you have this this pattern where you want to store a variable and its result, you need a consistent way to identify variables across producers of data, and that's the job that LOINC is trying to fulfill. Next slide. So not only does it have codes, we create codes for the individual observations, which is sort of the bread and butter of LOINC. There are also codes for collections of those things. And okay. In the laboratory side, you might. Is there a question?
Sorry, Dan. Can I interrupt? I see David, you have your hand up. Did you have a question for Dan?
No, that's probably left over from before.
Okay. Sorry. Okay, apologies. Please continue.
No worries. In the laboratory side, you might think of collections like order panels or batteries, but in other clinical spaces, you might call those things forms or data sets, structured enumerations of variables. And LOINC creates codes that represent those collections, as well as more loosely structured collections of information, such as clinical documents, whether that's a discharge summary, or you might think of a radiology report as sort of a loosely structured collection. LOINC also creates codes that identify those kinds of things, too. Next slide. And then the last sort of element of what LOINC is covering are connections to structured answer lists. And these are particularly important in some subdomains of clinical content. For example, patient-reported outcomes measures, such as the PROMISE measures, other sort of standardized assessment instruments, survey instruments. And so LOINC has a mechanism for defining these allowable answers and packaging them into a list and then connecting them to the question variable that they pertain to. In some areas, this is particularly important and is a little bit more of a more recent evolution in LOINC history. Next slide. And just sort of the nuts and bolts, right? LOINC is packaged into official distributions twice per year. It has a whole set of release artifacts that people can pick and choose depending on what their needs are for that content. And it's also, along with the sort of file structure, you can search the content online or via a desktop browser. And recently, we've also made the content available through a FHIR Terminology Services API. Next slide. So just to give a quick overview into some areas that might be less familiar, I thought I'd give a small taste of some of this content so you can have a picture of what is inside like, even beyond just sort of lab stuff. So next slide. Certainly, many of you in this task force has a focus on lab, which I think is great. But even sort of within that space, you might not know about sort of the full spectrum of variables that one has, for example, in newborn screening, which is now actually sort of a subsection in the HL7 lab results implementation guide, sort of covering that use case. Similarly, there's a whole spectrum of variables in clinical genetic reporting, which includes tests that are reported just as sort of single test measurements or presence absence kind of things, but also whole collections of variables that help organize structured reporting of different sort of styles of genomic reports for simple variants or structural copy number variants, pharmacogenomic studies, and so forth. And this too is included in these sets of terms are organized in the laboratory results implementation guide from HL7, which is also being worked on and actively developed from the FHIR implementation guide perspective as well. Now, linked lab content, for sure, you know, a single test can use the same link code both on the order side and on the result side. So the test you order is the thing that you get back. But there are also these collections or order sets or panels in LOIC. And a couple of years ago, stimulated by an SNI framework initiative, we built out a set of additional order panels and got consensus to sort of vet down a list of common order codes that covered a good portion of the volume. And while not as widely implemented, that subset is available in LOIC and has had a significant community input. And then last, I just mentioned that LOIC does work actively with CDC and others in the public health domain for any tests that are relevant for emerging diseases and reportable conditions as well. Next slide. On the clinical domain, LOIC has two big sort of sets of content that I think are important for your priorities. One is a set of terms that identify clinical notes and documents. We refer to this as the LOIC document ontology, and it's because there's a special set of attributes that can be used to organize those terms, but has been an active area of development in LOIC for quite some time. In addition, there's a really robust set of terms for radiology procedures to be used for ordering and resulting diagnostic imaging reports, and that was the product of a great collaboration with the RSNA. And today, there's a whole set of just under 6,000 or so radiology procedure terms that have a really detailed modeling connected to them, which can be powerful for aggregating or displaying or doing decision support against those procedure terms. Next slide. And then last, I'll just mention that there is a broad collection of other clinical variables spanning things that you might be familiar with, vital signs and other kinds of traditional clinical measurements, but other kinds of data sets as well, such as all of the items on the patient assessment instruments that are required by CMS and post-acute care. So these structured assessment forms, such as the MDS and OASIS and IRF-PI and so forth, we've been working very closely with CMS to represent all of those instruments, the question and answer structure, and so forth in LOIC. And there's a huge collection of those other kinds of assessment and patient-reported outcome terms in LOIC as well. Next slide. So how does LOIC fit into this kind of current landscape of implementation standards and so forth? I'll just kind of give a quick highlight here of how it fits together. So on the next slide, I just highlight the famous HL7 lab standards quartet, which some members of the band might be more familiar than others, but I refer to this quartet as, you know, the lab results implementation guide, lab orders interface guide, the public health electronic lab reporting a guide and the EDOS standard, which is definition and communication of a directory of service or a master test list or catalog or whatever. And across these four implementation guide standards, you know, LUNC is the code identified, the coding system identified for all of the places where you want to identify the test or the order set. So that appears, you know, as OVX3 or OVR4, but in the EDOS standard, there's a couple of other places where it's linked to, you know, what test is this? You know, there might be a producer code, like a local lab code, but then also a LUN code to identify what this is. And in each of these places, I will mention that there are the wording on the binding between what you put in here has this little, always has this little caveat, which is basically saying LUNC is the thing you should use, but if there is an appropriate LUNC code, you can use a local code. And that escape valve is a necessary one because the world keeps changing, and it's sort of unrealistic to think that the instant a new test is, you know, created and performed, that a standard code would exist to it, although we might be trying to work closer and closer to that goal. There might always be a period of time when a result needs to be sent out, but there might not be a standard code available for it. And then on the next slide, you can see where you know, this sort of pattern has carried forward into the work that Argonaut took up with the FHIR implementation guide and the US Core implementation guide, which is the SCU3 version of that. In the places where they're defining data element queries based on the ONC Common Clinical Data Set. And it sort of follows that same pattern. So observations tagged with LUNC codes, but other codes could be used if there isn't a suitable LUNC code. In addition, you'll find LUNC as the referenced vocabulary for documents and other kinds of clinical observations that are currently, you know, listed in the Common Clinical Data Set, such as smoking status, the observation code part of that, and then vital signs as well. Next slide. And I'll take you back to consolidated CDA 2.1 and sort of list there the places where, you know, LUNC is sort of specified, you know, in the results observation section. You'll find that same language as you saw in the version 2 guides for identifying LUNC codes for results, and then other places across those that set of document templates, including for document codes, for section codes, other kinds of observations like vital signs, skin wound measurements, and so forth. Next slide. So there are two other things that I just wanted to highlight for the task force from a broader ecosystem, kind of outside the ONC domain, just to make you aware of. So the FDA has been moving towards a broad vision of using real-world evidence in post-market surveillance. And kind of under that umbrella, there are two sort of important things. One is they have made a requirement for sending lab test data in regulated studies to them using LUNC codes to identify that data starting in 2020. And so from the clinical research side, this is something, you know, people are moving towards. In addition, the FDA has been pretty supportive of the direction of having IVD test vendors identify standard coding for their tests and making that information readily available to the consumers of that data, i.e. laboratories themselves and folks that are purchasing instruments and kits and so forth. And that conversation that FDA was helping to encourage inspired the development of a standard called LIVID, which is essentially, I think it just stands for LUNC for IVD tests. And it's a specification that is designed for vendors to publish a connection between instruments and the local codes that those instruments might produce, the measurements that they might produce, linked to the specific LUNC codes that are appropriate for that test. With the idea being if there was a standard format that IVD vendors could use to make this information available, it would dramatically simplify the process of setting up these new tests in LIS within the laboratory. And we believe that that will be a huge benefit. And that particular standard, the LIVID one, was also recommended by the CLIAC, the Clinical Laboratory Advisory Committee to HHS, and is being transitioned and is currently under ballot at HL7 as a fire implementation guide. Next slide. And then two other agencies just to kind of bring into perspective here. So certainly from a public health standpoint, CDC has been a longtime user of WANC in all of its lab reporting and even case report definitions and so forth, as well as some of the other national reporting initiatives, for example, around EMS data and trauma registries as well. And of course, CMS has been using WANC inside ACQM definitions based on recommendations from the Standards Committee. But then, as I mentioned earlier, on the side of post-acute care assessment instruments, they are working closely with us to define WANC codes that represent those instruments and have providers use them as well. So in the next slide, I'll just give you a sense of, okay, that's having heard a little bit about the standards ecosystem, federal ecosystem, you know, what does it look like today? And as an SEO, we don't have perfect information about this because we don't have, you know, RFIDs on WANC codes as they go out, and there's no sort of central stream that we can dip into to get a sampling of, you know, what the real-world usage is like. But we do know, for example, that all of the big reference labs have mapped their observation codes to WANC codes, Mayo, ARUP, LabCorp, et cetera, and that many of them are working on the order side. So that is a work in progress more than a work completed. We know that the big research networks use WANC in their common data models, so Odyssey, PCORnet, and so forth. And PCORnet has told us, after running some statistics on what they have, that about 94% of the results, the lab tests in their network had WANC codes hooked up to them. But sort of on the wire-coded results, we know, you know, that it for sure is happening, but I would say it is less frequent. And, for example, we heard from Diameter Health, which organizes an HIE of about 200 organizations, that they are seeing kind of inbound to them about a little more than half of the lab results being coded with WANC. And I bring this up because, you know, simply the existence of mappings does not necessarily mean that those mappings make its way into all emitted data streams from a source. And then last, I would just mention that there is, say, an emerging ecosystem of knowledge products that are leveraging WANC. And this is important just to recognize because it helps understand, like, well, what are the value propositions for the different stakeholders in the data producer and retriever stream for tackling the standardization problem? And having additional value adds for doing that standardization work certainly can help. And so there are, for example, Smart on Fire apps that help in calculations of various things that are powered by having WANC-coded data, and InfoButton-powered decision support tools that that leverage sort of the standardized coding available as well. So just to wrap up then, I'll make a couple of comments by way of sort of recommendations or what I see as sort of low-hanging fruit. So the first one I do just want to mention is, you know, there sometimes is the idea that if a code doesn't exist for the particular thing that I want, that all standards are broken and we need a new one, or, you know, we should give up or, you know, create a new terminology. And I guess I would just point out that all of the vocabulary standards that we talk about grow because the users make requests from them. And it's an ongoing process as people expand to cover new areas, new territories where they didn't have sort of structured data before. That stimulates requests for codes, but also certainly as medicine and testing keep evolving. So if you guys know of places where we're missing content, we'd love to work with you to add codes that address those gaps. In the next slide, though, I would say what I see as sort of low-hanging fruit are certainly the areas where people are already capturing structured data or haven't organized it in a way that adding the layer of sort of semantic coding on top of it would have a huge value. And so some of those areas are, you know, diagnostic imaging reports. And so the structures are all there, whether you want to use consolidated CDA or FHIR, DICOM, et cetera, like those all exist, but there hasn't been necessarily a broad push to get the sort of standard coding tagged to the report level. And yet, it seems like most people would want imaging reports in their exchanges and so forth. So that seems to me low-hanging fruit. In addition, general clinical measurements and observations don't necessarily need new structures, but they do need the extra work of tying standard codes to the local variables that exist. But that, too, could have a nice input. Clinical notes as well, for sure. Everyone has document repositories and so forth, but the extent to which they've been identified using sort of a consistent and common framework is probably low. That we know that there are many places that are working on that. And this, I know, is part of Argonaut's focus, but I would say to me that is one of the areas of low-hanging fruit. Then a little bit lower down the chain would be areas that people are recording structured data, such as patient-reported outcomes measurements or other standardized assessments, and they just aren't using standard codes for that stuff, but yet they're capturing it in a structured way. I'm not saying we should necessarily push capturing more of it, but if they are doing it, applying standard coding to it. And then, as I mentioned, this lab order side, there's been a lot of work to develop the specifications, including some pilot tests and so forth. It's a little bit of a harder domain because order sets are not as standardized across all laboratories, but there are techniques to address some of those variations. So while I think the standards exist, there really haven't been any direct, say, MU requirements or incentives to use them, and I think is something we should keep our eye on. Next slide. But in this, I would say, overall, right, the idea of standardizing data as far upstream as possible is the right approach. And so to that end, you know, this effort to help engage the IVD vendors to identify standard codes, you know, has tremendous benefit downstream. And I think sometimes we get in trouble where by sort of policy decision or whatever, we sort of say, well, the data has to be standardized, but it's maybe too far down the pipeline to make it really efficient. So, for example, like the point at which you're converting your data into a common data model for research purposes is probably a little bit far downstream to be doing mapping, standardized mapping. You want to try to get that closest to the source because it'll be more consistent, more accurate, and so forth. And then last, the committee chair's asked me to talk a little bit about, you know, how does LINC and StoneMed work in this? And I'll try to be sort of as crisp as possible. Basically, think of LINC as what you want to recommend for observations. Anywhere that you have that question-answer paradigm, you want to use LINC codes to identify the question or the variable. And then in a lot of spaces where the observation value is, say, an organism or a condition or whatever, like, you'll want to use StoneMed for that. And for other places where the data doesn't take that observation value format, where it's just like an assertion, it's a list, a problem list, and so forth, these are the places where StoneMed shines. And this approach, the sort of question-answer, LINC and StoneMed model, using them both together but for different sort of distinct purposes, is something that is part of the regulatory and StoneMed agreement endorsed by both organizations. I will mention one caveat here, which is that particularly in these areas of standardized assessments for like nursing questionnaires, nursing assessment instruments, patient-reported outcomes, and so forth, the answer sets really require very specialized strings, and they're not very easy to sort of represent as concepts in StoneMed. And so for many purposes, when you're communicating an exact questionnaire, and this is the recommendations from the nursing groups, for example, using like answers for those highly specialized strings helps you kind of retain the fidelity of the original instrument. And then I'll also just point out that in some other areas, such as genetics, you'll also need other kinds of standards for observation values, whether it's HGVS or ClinVar IDs and so forth. But this pattern of using both Blank and Soma together works, has been done, and I think is the right way to go. The last thing I would mention is this ecosystem from producers to receivers or actors applying data. There are two new tools that I wanted to bring the task force attention to that we've been working on in response to some of the priorities of the Lunk user community. So the first is a way to roll up sets of Lunk codes that could be treated as equivalent for a particular purpose. And so these purposes, of course, are quite varied. One might be for flow sheet display. Another might be for retrieval and a quality measure or a research study. You know, show me all the Lunk tests that have to do with X condition or X bug or whatever. This technique of sort of having a structured way of saying, okay, for this purpose, we're going to aggregate all the tests that measure the same substance that vary only by whether they are blood or arterial blood or venous blood or whatever, find me all those and put them into a group. That's kind of the design of what these things that we call link groups are. And so for data receivers, we think this is a useful tool for doing sort of equivalences. The second is we've been working hard based on a lot of input from the community to create some better display names. This is maybe not an eternal problem, but it is a challenge when there are lots of different kinds of stakeholders in this game. But our goal in developing this set of better display names was to keep them unique, but improve them and make them more user-friendly. And those came out for the first time in our June release, and we'll see and hear more about them. But the community put a lot of input into coming up with rules that would help us think about how to make better display names that retain that fidelity that Lunk is trying to shoot for. With that, I'll wrap up and say, thank you for the opportunity to share. I hope I hit the main targets of the questions you had, but in whatever time is remaining, Solomon and I would be happy to answer questions that the group might have.
Great. Thanks, Dan. Questions from task force members? David?
Yeah, Dan, thanks for a very clear presentation. But one question that you may have commented on, but I might have missed it, or maybe you just only answered part of it, is if you had to assess the overall flow of let's say, lab results back and forth between clinicians and the performing labs, be they the national reference labs or local hospital labs or whatever, would you hazard a guess as to what percentage of those are coded in Lunk? How close are we to everything being coded in Lunk? Any guess?
Yeah, so that's the closest I know to truth is, the sample we got from the Diameter Health HIE. So they're kind of receiving it from the system. I don't know the between lab to ordering provider side as much. And so what I would say is we know that the codes exist, and I believe that many of the mappings are done, but that doesn't mean that they're literally in the exchange message, meaning they could be looked up maybe on either side, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're in the transaction. And partly that might be, there might be a lot of reasons to that, but I would say, with some caveats, I don't know the actual sort of frequency, but that's about as close as I get. I know there's a ways to go.
When was that analysis done? Just out of reference?
Within a year.
Oh, fascinating. Just for another data point, when we had significant lab volume flowing through us, we could probably rerun this analysis. It was about the same, heavily skewed towards the reference and the large hospital labs, and then less adoption for your everyday hospital lab that serves for community lab support. So it may be that what we're seeing is a lack of progress over the last, let's say, 5 years, because that's the time that we did that poll.
So what was the percent? I missed the number.
50. 50.
All right, thanks. That's what I would have guessed roughly from our experience, but we haven't looked at it in quite a while. So.
Dan, this is Stephen Lane. I just wanted to say also thank you for that very clear and concise presentation. I think that there is just a tremendous alignment between, you know, what you just shared with us and the discussions that we've been having over the past few meetings of our task force, where we really see this as an opportunity to help close the same gap that you've identified. And we've been thinking about ways to do that. Some of them sound pretty dramatic, but I think we kind of have Cynthia Fisher to thank for being here representing the, you know, the individual patient perspective. And one of the ideas that we've thrown around is that LOINC coding from the resulting laboratory or any resulting agency should be a requirement for payment for getting paid to do a test. That the coding should be maintained with the result as it flows from the resulting agency to the ordering provider in the receiving systems, and whenever that result is shared between systems, whether you're talking about EHRs, PHRs, et cetera. What do you think about those ideas? What do you think that they are reasonable for a group like ours to be recommending? And what do you see as the challenges as we perhaps move those ideas forward?
Yeah, thank you. So in general, I think that is the right direction to go. I do know that there are examples of that model in play already, where certain insurance companies have required for participation in their plans that laboratories do provide LOINC-coded data. And of course, as they are interested in population health management and other kinds of services around their beneficiaries, you know, they wanted that same power of semantic aggregation as well. And I think a broad approach to that as a incentive to help move forward is, I think, a good one. I do believe that, you know, as you articulated it, the benefit of standardization happens when it's applied at the source and then is maintained sort of throughout the set of transactions that happen later. It is more error prone to try to do standardization anywhere else because you sort of lack the specificity of what was performed and how it was done and so forth. And so the upstream part is important, and then maintaining that connection between what was done and then wherever that result flows throughout the other ecosystem participants is a good strategy.
I see hands up. Let's go to Terry and then David.
Great. Yeah, and Dan, thank you. That was a great presentation. Something that got raised in the USCDI was the issue around local codes and the lack of mapping them to a standard like LOINC. Do you have any other examples of where you think interoperability is being held up? Citing that one as probably the principal, or is that the principal one? Any others where you think there's a breakdown in getting the result into a standard?
That is, I think, by far the biggest one. That's the biggest inertia that we have is, you know, the proliferation of local codes that exist. And so the challenge of moving from that paradigm to one in which those codes are linked to standards is a matter of, you know, getting the incentives right to make it happen. And then, as we discussed earlier, kind of getting it connected to the data flow, the outputs from that. There's the other sort of challenge in interoperability is there are some kinds of information that are not, that are organized more loosely than some receivers would like. So for example, in the clinical genetic reporting sphere, there's a fair amount of that sort of happening in laboratories and so forth, but the vast majority of the reports that that I've seen or that are in flowing in exchanges are still pretty much PDFs of that information. And yet, sort of within the lab, it has very structured things about, you know, the variants looked for, what was found, et cetera. But kind of on the output side, it's formatted in a way that you sort of lose that. That's one area where I think there, you know, additional structure and that work within HL7 to define a generalizable structure that at least pulls out sort of the key items that you would want in a discrete fashion, letting the text be there in certain places where it's helpful and useful, but having, say, key variables and structured data is very useful. But your first problem, I think, of you know, the proliferation of an existence of local codes everywhere is, I think, the prevailing problem.
I see David, Aryan, then Ricky, hands up.
Yes, it's David. Just a couple of comments. We could talk about this for the rest of the meeting, and I'm sure that's not the agenda, but I want to reinforce, Dan, the value of the work on equivalence classes, as Clem called them in our previous call, and you called them groups, the LOINC grouping. LOINC has the same problem of any bottom-up nomenclature, which is the excessive granularity from the point of view of many use cases. It's necessary granularity from the lab's point of view. Obviously, the tests matter. Every distinction matters. But to the clinician, if you want to look up glucose and there's over, you know, 300 or 400 LOINC codes where glucose is the analyte, it's overwhelming and doesn't make for easy use of the LOINC code. So there's a huge value in making that those equivalence classes or an ontology, if you would, available. And then I want to call out, so that's just a comment and reinforce, you know, how valuable that work is. And second is just this mapping thing is really complicated and potentially fraught with error because the mapping from randomly assigned local codes, and they're not obviously random, but they're random in the sense that they weren't necessarily starting with LOINC in mind, to a LOINC code requires a lot of judgment calls. And since there aren't sort of high-level grouper codes that are like equivalence class for, say, this is a kind of a blood pressure, but it's so granular in this institution we can't map it to an existing LOINC code, you end up getting mappings that are, you know, maybe not perfectly accurate. And I just think that that's an issue in the long run that we'll have to figure out. Getting the lab originator, if it's a lab test, to assign the right LOINC code is the best solution, as you point out. Get it at the source, because they're the only ones who really know exactly what they're doing. But then don't forget that there's hundreds or thousands of observations generated locally that are coded to LOINC that aren't lab tests. They're data from forms and other structured assessments where institutions are doing the assigning. And it's a challenge to get those mappings right. We should just be aware of that.
Thanks, David. And in terms of the logistics of this meeting, this particular topic of how do we get more upstream LOINC coding of labs was going to be an important topic, and what are the policy levers and who's responsible. So my suggestion is we continue this discussion, including this. And I see, Aryan, your hand is up. You had a lot of recommendations around here. I wonder if it wasn't what you were going to comment on, if you could add in a comment on, you know, your proposal of how we actually get that to happen, and maybe we can discuss it as a group. And you're muted if you're talking, Aryan.
That would be the mute button. So first of all, thank you. So I'm super pleased that some of the recommendations, and it wouldn't be no surprise to anybody, some of these are recommendations that I've been making for many, many years, are actually in flight, and in particular, FDA embracing LOINC for IVDs to make sure that we have true upstream generation of LOINC codes at source. Do you know how many IVDs are being issued with LOINC codes, and then is there anything being done right now to retrofit to provide standardized LOINC mapping for the output of IVDs?
Yeah, so what I do know is that nearly all of the big IVD companies have mapped their internal codes to one codes.
Awesome.
Many of them have made those mappings available to their customers in a variety of ways, so from their internal portals, PDF technical documentation that goes along with it, and so forth. But some have been more reserved or cautious about making such mappings available, in part because they were waiting for the sort of assurance that they couldn't get into trouble with the FDA if they made them available. So the August guidance from FDA sort of on this topic was a long time in gestation, as I guess all guidances from the FDA are. But it was kind of to address that point. And they were worried that, say, if I map to a generic one code or a Cirplaz one code, but my test is only approved for use on serum, am I going to get in trouble for some off-market labeling if by publishing these mappings? And so there was rightfully so, some caution about how they should approach this. In addition, they are more, because of that caution, they're more sensitive to wanting to try to get it right, for the most part, the mappings, that is, which is a good thing. But the fact that some have mapped it does not necessarily mean that they're sort of widely available yet, partly because of that ecosystem thing.
Thank you. And then just a little editorial, because I'd remind the committee that the full ecosystem in the line of fire, if you will, for physicians getting beautifully trended results that are link native includes the IVDs, the labs, the lab system vendors, the intermediaries who route and manage lab data, and the EHR vendor, and then the actual EHR implementation. So to some extent, ideally you have everything perfect at the source, which is the actual analyte machine, and then you flow through. But this is a somewhat sticky ecosystem because the IVD vendor could publish the LOINC mapping, but the lab's up and running with proprietary codes and doesn't want to take the effort of remapping. Out-of-the-box mappings at least lower the effort, the perceived effort there. I want to ask a question about CLIA and the CLIA committee, CLIAC. Has the CLIA office formally recommended the LRI and the associated LOINC mapping as a target for CLIA-regulated laboratories? And what could, from your perspective and from your knowledge, what else could CLIA be doing to encourage CLIA-regulated labs to adopt standards, and in particular LOINC? And this is one of these terrible questions that has an editorial baked into it. One of the things that I've been pushing for a while back when I was at ONC and working with CMS and the CLIA office was to establish, whether it be safe harbors or equivalents for safe harbors for new EHR onboarding. As I think some people know, when labs onboard results delivery, the lab has an obligation to verify that the lab results are received in the EHR in ways that are clinically valid and satisfy the quality conditions that CLIA has established. And I've been proposing for a while that if you use standards to a certified EHR technology, that should at least, if not a safe harbor, at least allow you to document the test more effectively, but there may be more other things that CLIA can do, and I just wonder if you've got A, knowledge, and B, recommendations for what the CLIA office could do in its oversight for labs.
Thanks. Those are great comments. I did speak to the CLIA committee in April at their meeting with some others kind of around this interoperability topic. They certainly have discussed it and made a series of recommendations which I could send to the committee. But previously they've been less specific, I guess I would say. They, in general, you know, clearly have to recommend, for example, HHS, that the laboratories have a better understanding of the nuances of blunt codes and others and use cases of them and so forth. But didn't specifically say, you know, you should use LRI. And, you know, there should be, for example, sort of a certification around the mapping of local tests to blunt codes or anything sort of around that space. Most recently, they did make specific recommendations to FDA and CMS to, I think the wording is something around create and implement guidelines for IVD and LIS manufacturers around interoperability specifications, and they actually had in there sort of require the use of emerging standards such as the lab analytic workflow profile from IHE and the LIVID thing that I mentioned earlier. And so the LAW profile is kind of the internal lab workflow profile, which does have support for LUNC in it, but I don't believe that they've come into really any other more specific recommendations around this, but it has been a relatively frequent topic of their deliberations.
Awesome.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Just for sake of time, let's do Ricky, Stephen, and then circle back after that to any further comments. Rick, and we need to have time for potential future topics as well. Ricky, Stephen?
Sure, I'll keep this super brief. This was related back to a comment that Stephen made around tying use of LOINC to reimbursement or other incentives or requirements. And my question was what appetite there is for specifying LOINC as a required standard. Obviously, it's a sticky subject, and in regulation, X12 often comes up. Even FHIR wasn't required for use of APIs. And, you know, because of the various consequences, I understand the hesitation to do that because new standards can come along at any point, and we don't want to limit ourselves. But I was wondering if you had some thoughts on what the right path is there from a regulatory standpoint. Should it be required? Should it not be? And how can this group best help?
Thanks. I think the key is kind of what Stephen talked about, sort of required for whom and how. I think we get into trouble when the requirement is on the person who's too far away to make the accurate thing, and we didn't give any incentives or leverage to, say, the laboratory or the data producer, who sort of has to do the work of not only mapping, but then paying for changing, you know, their interface, which we know can be a non-trivial matter. So in general, I think it is a reasonable sort of participation requirement, which is why the sort of payment route, I think, is a good one, because especially as we consider sort of changing payment models and so forth, you know, that it can be a start, but it can also be sort of in the realm of sort of value-based payment. The sort of participations in a network are is another place in which those call them regulations requirements can be helpful. So I think the direction of payment-based is a good one, but yeah, there's been sort of a little bit of hesitation thus far. And the other thing is people don't necessarily realize, too, the extent to which sort of the existing regulations, say, named or adopted a implementation specification like an HL7, IG, or consolidated CDA, or whatever, and then inside there were baked these sort of terminology requirements, and it sort of took the community a little while to sort of figure that out. Oh, man, now I've got to map these things. That wasn't sort of front and center in their mind at first, and so it might have come sort of downstream as they were working on it, not sort of the first pass.
Great, thank you.
Stephen, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I just wanted to say, if we were successful in creating this requirement, if you want to get paid for doing something, you have to produce the output with appropriate blank coding, would that be problematic for Regent Street, for LOINC, to keep up with that? Because presumably that would create a new demand for folks to figure out, you know, what they're going to be coding to. I think would also create a demand for LOINC coding of locally generated results. So two questions: can you keep up? And two, do you see a substantial risk that people will just start coding things willy-nilly and inaccurately? And if so, how would we avoid that?
Great question. So to some extent, we don't know if we can keep up or not. Though we are, you know, I guess what I would say is the landscape has been evolving in such a way that as more and more of the IVD test manufacturers come and request codes to us sort of early in their process, then, you know, it's not that we're getting independent requests from 15 different labs for the same thing. You sort of get it done once and for all. And so that scope of things is manageable, particularly when the interaction is with the person or the source that knows that test the best. They know exactly how it's measured and performed. And so our work to sort of create a code that matches that is actually far easier than sort of working with interpretations of that from many different stakeholders. Is it problematic? So what it would do, so there are ways in which people would try to sort of shortcut and make things easier. And so it's certainly the case that you could map like a lot of tests or like your entire reference, all the tests that you send out, you could map to a single like miscellaneous test code and technically, right, you'd be sort of compliant. You had a LOINC code there, but it really wouldn't serve the purpose. So I think there is probably another layer of, I don't exactly know where the right place would be, but sort of certification around the accuracy or appropriateness of mappings is something that can't really be automatically tested, unless we get to a point where we have codes for devices and those are all, you know, electronically connected to codes, you know, output codes from LOINC. Like we couldn't really test a given sort of lab stream of data without significant sort of subject matter expertise to review, like, are these good mappings or not? And that would be for sure a potential challenge.
I have one question that's a little bit different. You mentioned about how the recommendation now is that orderables are also done by LOINC. Is that something the ITSIDO folks also agree, that orderables should be LOINC-based and not SNOMED-based?
So we in our current agreement with them, we included the scope of sort of orderables, but there's one important kind of difference between what LOINC does and what SNOMED does, which is essentially there's no model in SNOMED for connecting an order to the set of things that would come back from it, whereas that's kind of been the sort of standard way in which LOINC has done it. So not only do we create a code that represents CVC, but we enumerate the set of child elements that are linked to it. But that doesn't mean that, so within the U.S. compared to other countries, there are different paradigms for ordering. I'll say that. And so there are other places that don't use LOINC codes. They use very general codes, and the provider sort of orders like one of these, and the lab just does kind of whatever it wants. In the U.S., there's a more tight connection between specifically what's ordered and what exactly can be expected as a result, which is why the model that LOINC has is a nice package, because you can sort of enumerate exactly what those things are. So that's, I guess, the current state of the shortest answer I can think of for that.
So maybe to just put it another way, like if you look at, say, the FHIR US score procedure resource, they say that if you can express it in CPT or SNOMED, you must express it as SNOMED or CPT. Are you basically saying you disagree with that assessment?
So here's the problem, which is that the the idea of procedures can have a variety of meanings. in some views, procedure can be everything under the sun. Every action sort of in healthcare can be thought of as a procedure. Whereas in general, the more circumscribed notion of a procedure is, you know, something like an operation or an ordered thing. That's not the same as a diagnostic test or a laboratory measurement. So on the one hand, people can conceptualize, you know, a lab test as a procedure, but it doesn't fit that same paradigm. And so you can get sort of tripped up thinking about that. But, one doesn't have codes for appendectomy or, you know, any other procedure, nor do we have, you know, a vision to do that. It's only the things that would be ordered as a collection, where your expectation is that when I order this thing, what I'm going to get back is a set of results. And that's where the radiology side is different than some of the other things, which is, you know, you're ordering this and you're expecting back, you know, the report with the detailed findings on it.
Well, thanks. So I'm going to table that thought, but I think if we get into the notion of order catalogs, we will need to have a pretty detailed discussion on value sets for that. We have about 13 minutes until public comment. We've already been getting into what should be our recommendation moving forward, the discussion of how to make sure link codes are implemented upstream. We did want to discuss a little bit where to go next. Stephen, do you have thoughts on, do you want to spend the rest of the time just going over further on how do we make sure link codes are done upstream, or do you want to spend some time also on what are the domains after labs we want to go to? Thoughts?
Yeah, my thought, and unfortunately I'm going to have to start boarding a plane soon, so I apologize, is that we've done a lot of good work. And again, I think we should just, you know, give Dan our final thanks for an excellent presentation. So thank you, Dan. But I do think that we're coming to a close on this. I think we're really narrowing in on what our recommendations are going to be. They are reflected in the recommendations document that we prepared. I think we will continue to refine that and hopefully shrink it down a bit so that it's really quite understandable. But I think we're interested in getting people's feedback on that document as it exists. Everyone on the task force should have access to that. And please do send feedback to Ken and myself so that we can incorporate that as we refine it. I think we'd like to bring that back at our next meeting for a detailed discussion and hopefully a finalization. But I think it's also appropriate, as you say, Ken, to start to prepare for what we're going to do next. We have a number of other prioritized domains that we've talked about focusing on. We've talked about splitting into multiple groups to work in parallel. And I think, Ken, if you can sort of take us through that and get input on what our next steps are going to look like, we should be planning probably for the meeting after next to start chartering those next sets of groups.
Yeah, let's then spend maybe 5 minutes on, I'm going to start sharing screen here, on these recommendations. And then let's say 5 minutes on the next steps, and then I'll take public comments. If there is extra time after that, let's come back to some of these. So I'm sharing my screen. Is it visible for the – I can zoom it in further, but is it generally visible?
It's visible. It needs a good zoom.
Okay. I'm going to zoom in then. So there's a number of recommendations, and everyone had access to this, but – I think we should just focus right now on probably the top recommendation we're all sort of honing in on is, you know, for lab results, so already scoped down a bit, and for results, a big issue is that many of the results in actual practice are not link-coded, in particular for non-reference lab, local hospital codes, labs, et cetera. And that was a sobering assessment of a 50%. My experience hasn't been that low, so that's bad. So Arian was kind enough to think through like all the policy hats, et cetera, to have some recommendations. I don't know if you want to, I think we've covered a lot of this, but do you want to give a quick overview of this and
We obviously want to shorten it down a little bit, but I think this is worth having some more group discussion on.
No, thank you. So I just basically wrote down a number of the policy recommendations. We've already discussed many of them. Number one is we've identified that we have good guidance and implementation guidance and standards for lab delivery, but we don't have the document delivery equivalent. So part of the recommendations here is to make sure that we extend the LRI to the appropriate standards for delivery of textual documents. Some of this work's already been done, but let's make sure that we harmonize all the way through. And I believe this has actually mostly been done. But we should harmonize from LRI, LOI, SMART, FHIR, and all the rest of the standards to make sure that if a test is generated upstream, it's available to patients downstream. Again, much of this work's already been done, but need to normalize to ECQMs as well. Make sure that we address where we are and actually get better numbers about where we actually are so that we can identify areas for focus. And, you know, if my hypothesis is that we've got a broad base in the commercial lab space but weaknesses in the smaller hospitals, we may pick different policy levers than if, you know, commercial labs are recalcitrant and the like. We talked about the FDA coordination, and that work's already going on, but we can do a better job of making sure that standard mappings are available to labs. And then the lab ecosystem is really the critical linchpin. I'd say the two critical linchpins right now are the lab ecosystem, which is regulated by CLIA and has oversight by CAP, and then the EHR connectivity endpoints. And one of the things I want the committee to think about, or the task force to think about, is that in many cases we have we have trenches already dug for gas lines to the house, and those gas lines were done, you know, years ago. You need to redig the trench in order to lay the LRI LOINC compatible lines. So, you know, if you're an EHR, if you're a hospital, if you're a ambulatory provider, a little easier sometimes for hospitals, but if you're an ambulatory provider you already have an existing lab interface, is it worth, and we're talking about conditions of payment, for example, you know, if the condition of payment is on the lab to get paid, it also has to be on the EHR to receive. Is it worth digging up all of the existing lab interfaces and redoing them? But, sorry, that was a little digression. We need to be working with CLIA and CAP to identify and remove obstacles for use of standards. We talked about FDA. So CMS has a ton of levers, including, I think, some underutilized levers through the CLIA office. CLIA has tended to be a little standoff with regard to adoption and use of standards in labs, as well as adoption and use of policy levers in order to drive the labs towards use of standards. CMS can include lab requirements in more programs. So short of conditions of payment, there are conditions of participation and other programmatics relative to promoting interoperability, the QPP, ACO requirements, bundled payment requirements, and the like that could and should address use of standard-based labs. I talked about the opt-out nature of the electronic lab receipt, and again, just for some of the inside baseball for people to understand, the reason that the measure was topped out was the measure was defined as EHRs that can receive labs electronically. And then the associating standard on the ONC side was use of LRI and LOINC. but there's no tie between those two things. So an EHR that receives labs electronically, and you know, it may receive labs electronically from its commercial lab vendors, from Quest and LabCorp, that have very aggressively made electronic lab receipt available. That EHR receiver, the physician, may be able to report and attest the measure, may have some subset of their electronic receipt that's link encoded, but may not have basically all the way end-to-end address the need. And so I think we've identified we're in somewhat of this sticky state. We may want to reconsider that certification requirement and the associated meaningful use measure to address the full lab experience, as opposed to just the mere receipt of electronic information. And then I mentioned a number of other federal agencies, so VHA, DOD, the Indian Health Services, Prison Services, Department of Homeland Security. Many federal agencies run organizations that have healthcare treatment facilities that receive electronic labs, and you know, using those federal providers as a lever for standards adoption would be useful. My suspicion is many of them already do this, and many of them do this for their in-person labs. VHA, for example, outsources many of its radiology labs and works with organizations. So VHA would be an interesting lever for standardization of receipt of the results. And then I think there are better certification criteria for INCLIA. You know, one of the ones that I've endorsed in the past is that, and people may not be aware of this, under CLIA, a lab has an obligation to verify that the receipt of that lab is received in a way that is clinically valid. So in the old days, if I sent a lab out via pieces of paper, I needed to verify those pieces of paper, the tabulations in those pieces of paper actually mapped to the clinically valid output of my lab. When I send electronically, the way that those regulations those requirements are interpreted is a requirement that the lab, when it sends electronically to EHRs, actually verify that the screens in the EHR are configured in ways to view the lab. Part of my idea here is that if the EHR is a certified EHR, it's been certified to the LRI guide using LOINC, and if the lab is sending via LRI and LOINC, that at least some of the requirements there should be minimized. Part of the problem is that CLIA is adamant that there's no regulatory burden caused by this additional review, and so there's no burden reduction that's possible and available. In the real world, there is a burden, and there is a burden reduction. But there are other tools that CLIA could use, including outright to mandate use of or availability of LRI and LOINC, to mandate the use of mapping tools, and even just to promote the use of mapping tools.
Thanks. We've hit the public comment period, so let's switch to that for a moment. Could we check for if anybody has public comments? Can you call in here? Do we have any public comments on the queue?
Sure. They may have to open the line yet. Operator, can you please open the public line for a comment?
Certainly. If you'd like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue, and you may press star 2 if you'd like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, that is star 1 if you'd like to make a comment at this time.
Thank you. And I'm just going to go back to a quick roll call to see if any other members have joined. Do we have Andy Truscott on the line? Okay. Leslie Leonard? Jack Poe? Raj Ratani? Scott Weingarten? Cheryl Turney? I think I saw her on the Adobe. And Valerie Gray?
Cheryl, Sorry, Cheryl's on, and I announced in the beginning also.
Okay. Sorry, I missed you earlier.
Hi, yeah, Val Gray is on too. I apologize, I was a little late.
No worries. Thank you, Valerie. And operator, do we have any comments in the queue at this time?
Not at this time.
Okay. I'll turn it back to you, Ariane or Ken.
Yeah, let me take on for a second. So let's discuss a little bit on what's next for this work on orders and observations, and then move on to what's next after that. So I'll put a straw man up, which is that it seems the biggest issue in the space that we've identified is, again, this the fact that link codes are not provided from upstream by many folks, in particular local hospitals. We've discussed hospital labs. We've discussed a number of potential recommendations. My suggestion would be that we work on those recommendations a little bit more offline, streamline, et cetera, and make that available to the task force members, and then review it perhaps at the next meeting to finalize the recommendations around that specific aspect. Any thoughts from folks on whether that's the appropriate priority, or whether that's an appropriate mechanism to get at the recommendations around that issue?
Yeah, Ken, this is Terry. I think it's a great recommendation. I'm wondering if we couldn't make a list of the sort of policy levers that exist that Ariane went through a bunch of them. But my suspicion is we're going to be pulling the same levers for everything.
That's true. That's a really good point. So in a separate sort of thought on this, Ariane had listed for us in nicely, you know, here's the from just, you know, talking about it to encouraging people all the way down to condition for payment kind of thing, like all the potential levers that can be done. I think just having that as a maybe even a separate, you know, just a reference point that we work on together that we can pull from and be very mindful when we're using a very, very heavy-handed one, I think would be useful. David, you have a comment?
Yeah, and it's just, I think there's no question that we could go from good to better with some of these recommendations. My question is, when we zoom out, is this the primary thing we would really like to mm-hmm. do? If we have a limited number of opportunities to, you know, change things, to get the political will to do something, is this at the top of our list? And I'm not saying it isn't. I just think that we need to be careful not to make, you know, taking a situation that isn't completely broken or isn't even really broken, making it better, but giving up some opportunity to do some more important and fundamental things.
No, I completely agree. I mean, that gets at the notion of what do we do with the other issues we identified. So one suggestion for those is we maybe, and this may be a pattern that we do for these other items, for whatever we think are the most important things, and maybe per topic it's, say, you know, maximum of, I don't know, I don't want to do a number, but maximum of doable or, you know, manageable, and we never get rid of recommendations or issues we've identified. It just goes into a parking lot of things that, you know, we come back to if there's and flesh out more if there's time, or recommend that, you know, flesh out more in, you know, subsequent periods. I think the key question is, are we missing something in this discussion right now that we consider to be very important that hasn't been done, that should not be, say, a parking lot item or whatnot? Maybe what the task force members can do, everyone does have access to the document, and as we define what we think is the top priority, I guess, or priorities and the recommended actions, if task force members see areas that they think should be bumped towards the top, then we should do that and discuss it with the goal of, you know, coming up with a list of, I guess, you know, with, I don't think there's any hard and fast number, but I think the issue is, like, if we come up with 20 recommendations, the likelihood of any of the recommendations being followed becomes much less than if we come up with, like, a recommendation of 3, I think. And the recommendations can have subtasks, of course, but I think just be mindful that, you know, we need to prioritize what we think are the highest issues. And if we disagree on those, then we need to make sure we address that as well. Okay, so I think action item-wise, it will be sort of document-driven over the next 2 weeks, so please keep an eye out for requests. And then let's discuss that, hopefully to finalize 2 weeks from now. We have a few minutes left. Can we move on to the discussion on the prioritization matrix, the survey results from before? Yeah, so this is what we sort of ended up with at the last, you know, the initial kind of cycling. And now that we've done this or have gone through this process, I think we have two questions. One is, how many of is should we do this as a group or and try to just, you know, say spend 3 or 4 meetings, which equivalent is going to be a month and a half to 2 months on each topic and then move on to the next? Or should we split up into parallel groups? Any thoughts on that from folks? What would you like to do? Okay, then I'm going to go with an assumption that perhaps I think the diversity of opinion and thought is good, and that I think if we split up the bandwidth available from the task force members, maybe a little bit challenged. So my suggestion is initially we probably continue this path of let's, you know, march down this list and spend 3 to 4 meetings doing what we've done, with the idea that if we don't, the main important issue is come up with problem identification and potential recommendations and then to prioritize. With the notion that we may parking lot some items that, and my suggestion is if folks can, are always welcome to work on those parking lot items even after we've moved on to other general topics as well so that they can bring it back to the committee or task force. So then the next question is medication pharmacy data the right one to move on to next? That would be the default given what the original rankings was. Does anybody feel that we should put something else? When we start on a new topic, say 2 meetings from now.
This is Arian. We haven't, and this may just be part of the design of the committee, we haven't addressed the unmet needs of existing forms of exchange, and maybe we down prioritize them.
Yeah.
But, you know, query-based access to data, directed exchange of data, some of the basic fundamental, the usability of some of the basic fundamentals we really haven't addressed. And again, that may just be design, and we didn't feel like that was those were actually important policy goals.
Yeah, how about, and I think part of the issue was we were trying, because our charge was around clinical use cases, infrastructure started getting sort of, I guess, didn't make it to the list. Because of the lack of time right now, we're about to close. Let's plan on having a little bit more discussion on this next time we meet. But in the interim, if you can just keep in mind now that we've sort of gone through this and have a sense of what this is going to entail, if you have thoughts on, you know, whether your thoughts on where we should focus has changed, please keep that in mind and either communicate to Stephen and I offline or let's discuss it at the next meeting. Okay, I think we're right at time. Thanks, everyone. I believe we will close now.
Yeah. Thanks, Ken. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye.